Back together again, you and I chatting it up. Brand new week, Monday style, the 18th of May, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. In the past weekend's state Democratic and Republican nominating conventions dominated the show with the commentary and views from yours truly, along with two of our go-to guys at Southern Connecticut State University, poli-sci and urban affairs professor Dr. Jonathan Wharton and Connecticut News Junkie columnist and Substack.com blogger Terry Cowgill. Well, isn't it interesting after the past weekend? Hey, how are you? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Well, how quickly the plot thickens and the plot changes from what all these political pundits, yours truly included, thought we were going to have coming up in the latter part of the campaign here, as compared to what we actually now have in the latter part of the campaign here. Remember, it was barely a few months ago where everybody was saying, no, Josh Elliott will never get the 15%. A lot of people, including the pundits I have regularly on this program, are saying, nah, Elliott doesn't have a shot. No, he'll get 5 or 6%, and Ned Lamont's going to be, you know, scooting into another nomination for the Democrats and then scooting into another four-year term, an unprecedented third four-year term. Well, how about that, huh? What happened over the weekend? We'll talk about that. And on the Republican side, people again predicted the exact opposite of what happened. Now, it wasn't for any real political reasons here. We all know what happened with the pullout there of Aaron Stewart, but everybody was talking here about maybe a 50-50 convention split with Betsy McCoy maybe picking up some of the crumbs here after what everybody thought would happen. But again, it turned out to be Ryan Fazio, pretty much because Aaron Stewart had to pull out there and Betsy McCoy didn't get the support I thought she would get. It was a loud few handfuls of delegates that supported her. But now on the Republican side, where you thought we would have this knockdown, blood and guts battle from this past weekend to primary day in August, you have the opposite. You have, for the first time in a long time here in Connecticut, you've got, especially for the governor's race here, you've got one guy out front, our buddy, our pal, friend of the radio station, Ryan Fazio, who is saying, hey, let's go, let's rock and roll, right? And on the opposite end, when everybody was saying, oh, it's just going to be a coronation for Ned Lamont. Now, the governor did get 75% of the delegates. It was almost exact. It was like 75 to 25 or 74 and a half to 25 and a half or something like that. But remember, Josh Elliott only needed 15%. He got 25. And I saw a few people say this over the weekend saying, hey, well, if he has 25% of people that are or delegates that are willing to go on the record. Remember, when you vote at the convention, they know who's voting for who or for whom. So people know what's going on here, and if you'd like to vote for somebody as a delegate, but you don't want to because you don't want to catch crap being dumped on you by the party lords and bosses, you may say, well, all right, I'll vote for the guy who's going to win or the gal who's going to win, but I'd really rather we get a challenge here at least. Well, somebody was saying, look, if Josh Elliott picked up 25% of the vote in a process where people, you know, where you basically know who's voting for who or for whom, how much deeper if you go to an anonymous vote, if you ever went to an anonymous vote at the convention, or if you go to an anonymous vote at the primary, how deep does Josh Elliott's support really run here? You know it's more than 25%. You know it. Now, how much more? I don't know. I'm still pretty confident here that Governor Ned Lamont wins the nomination, but it's going to be interesting to see how this whole thing plays out. Because convention has been flipped on its ear here, when you think about it. When you think about what we thought was going to happen, this knockdown, drag out, probably primary, after odds on, everybody thought Aaron Stewart would be the endorsed candidate, Ryan Fazio would get a good chunk of support, and there were people saying, hey, you could see a three-way primary here. They thought Betsy McCoy's support was deeper than it actually was. I didn't get the exact number for her, but that's neither here nor there right now. And then on the Democratic side, you thought King Ned, no offense to the governor, but everybody was saying, oh, it's going to be a coronation. They're going to crown him, and he's going to skate right in. Well, at least not now. So we shall see here. I want to spend the first couple of hours of the program getting your thoughts here, especially if you are a registered Democrat. If you are somebody that is anybody who listens to this program, thank you. Have you thought about your vote in a now coming primary where the governor picked up about 75% of the delegates over the weekend, and Josh Elliott, who only needed 15%, he got 25. It's one out of four. And you know there are people who were scared to vote for him. So we start out with two questions today. Two and one, whatever the candy that was, I forgot. If number one, I want to hear from you. We got a couple of people hanging on already. 333-9422, talk or text. If you're a Democratic primary voter, if you are a registered Democrat, or you intend to vote in the primary, are you going with Governor Ned Lamont, or is it time for a change? Are you of the more progressive wing of the party now? You want to tax rich individuals here in Connecticut more? Where do you stand on that? Are you a Ned Lamont person or a Josh Elliott person? And our second question of the day, let's assume, I know that's dangerous, but let's assume here that Governor Ned Lamont pushes back on the challenge from, you know, Josh Elliott, and he is the nominee. So who you got? Who's your guy? Who's your horse or your pony in the race? We are in Triple Crown season. We just had the Preakness over the weekend, the Belmont coming up in, what, 3 weeks, I think? But who do you have in November, Ned Lamont or Ryan Fazio? Is it time to give a young, policy-savvy Republican guy, albeit from Fairfield County again, a shot here? Go to the phones momentarily at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. So both of the scripts were flipped on the weekend. The Democrats were supposed to have a coronation. Yeah, maybe that Josh Elliott guy. Maybe he squeaks in with 15 or 16%. He got 25%. And that doesn't count people who were probably afraid to vote for him because, you know, the party hierarchy, you know, if you don't cooperate with Mr. Morrow, Mr. Alves, Mr. Testa, you know what can happen here. And then on the flip side, oh, everybody was going to laugh at the Republicans having a conservative bloodbath. No, politically, that is. No, they say, hey, let's rock and roll. We got Ryan Fazio out there, a young, good-looking, 36-year-old guy. Clark Kent, people have nicknamed him. And he's going to take it to Ned Lamont or maybe Josh Elliott. You don't know. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Oh, look who's here. This is a good first caller here. Let's see if this guy was on hand with a first-hand report. Jose in Shelton. Jose, what's up? Were you with the Bushnell on the weekend?
What's going on, Mr. Paul Pacelli?
Were you there?
Shelton.
Were you there?
I was a delegate, but I was a proxy. I couldn't make it. So I had a proxy going. But anyway, let me answer your question.
Yeah, well, give me your sharp analysis of all this, Jose.
Since 1975, yep. I've been right on every election.
All right.
I don't want to toot my own horn.
All right.
Here's the way it's going to play out.
Yeah.
Lamont, 75% of the vote in August primary.
Yeah.
Josh, 25%. The only thing tricky about that is in August, everybody's on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing on a voter's mind in August is to go vote. So So that's tricky.
Yeah.
But I think Lamont's team is going to get out the vote, and it'll be like the convention, 75-25.
So
split.
You think then that Elliott has already hit his ceiling?
Yeah, he hit his ceiling because he doesn't have A, the money, B, he doesn't have the, you know, the team behind him. All the large cities in Connecticut, they're all Lamont.
Yeah.
Lamont's doing a great job. Do you know Lamont's the third-rated governor of the whole country?
No, and I don't doubt that, Jose. Look, the guy pretty much on the budget and on money issues, he's with the Republicans. But you wonder, Jose.
He's with the centrist Democrats.
Well, yeah, and the Republicans, too.
Let me tell you, Republican policy in Connecticut does not work. Because Connecticut, we're a generous and moderate state.
Well, let me ask you something. Let me ask you something. Yeah. You know these guardrails that Lamont loves to talk about that have been successful? Which party you think came up with those?
What guardrails? No, the guardrails are all put in place by Democrats.
No, they weren't.
Republicans in Connecticut have no clue.
Jose, this is when you got to push the Kool-Aid away. Have some scotch. Have a nice beer. But
election, 65-35.
No, no way. 52-48. 52-48.
Going away.
52-48, Lamont. 52-48. Mark it down, Jose. 52-48.
65-35.
Jose, I love you,
you remember what happened in the last election?
Yeah. Wasn't
25 Republican CEOs of towns and cities flipped to Democrats.
Well, you know why, don't you? You know why they voted for Lamont, don't you? Because they knew he could keep all the nutcases in your party at bay. That's why they did it.
No, they voted for Lamont because he's doing a great job.
Well, yes, because, and thank you, Jose, I appreciate it. And I love Jose, but he was just breaking my castanets there. If you go back to 2016, 2017, 2018, the fiscal guardrails were pushed by and installed by the Republican Party with the help of some Democrats. I guess there were three or four Democrats in the state Senate that made this happen. But see, this is exactly why Josh Elliott and the progressive left here in Connecticut are gaining strength, because they don't like the fiscal guardrails. They want to raise taxes on who they term as wealthy. They want to raise taxes on the wealthy. They all do this thing, the 1% or the 2% or the 5%. So listen, I don't think that Josh Elliott will be the nominee, but God, wouldn't it be fun if he was? Oh, sweet Jesus, dear Lord in heaven, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, it'd be Josh Elliott we love the most. Can you imagine? But there's a bigger issue here. And if you look at what happened at the Bushnell, if you look at what happened with John Larson and Luke Bronin, there is a much bigger issue here than just Ryan Fazio or Ned Lamont or Josh Elliott. There is a big, big issue here I want to get into. You know where I'm going with this. There is a reckoning coming for the Democratic Party in this country. And what direction is that going to be? Are you going to hang with AOC, who famously said, and maybe I'll play the bite a bit later on, AOC said, what, you can't make $1 billion or something asinine like that? And dear God, please run for the White House. Please, Sandy. She wants to be called Sandy now. I'm begging you to do that. I'm saying a rosary to Amaron. Please run for the White House. But Josh Elliott was a signal. Hello, that was a signal over the weekend to all you fine Connecticut Democrats out there. Give me a shout. Let me know what you think. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Joining us right now is a guy we always love to have on the program, Dr. Jonathan Wharton, poli-sci guy extraordinaire, former congressional aide up on the Hill in D.C., looking at what happened over the weekend with both the Democrats and Republicans. John, of course, out of the fine folks at Southern Connecticut State University in New Haven. Hey, John, good afternoon, sir. It's Paul again. How are you?
Good, doing well. Thanks for having me on.
I wanted to get, you're one of the guys I definitely wanted to speak to. Okay, first thing, the Republicans are unscathed. There was no circular firing squad this time, courtesy of Aaron Stewart. So I would guess, John, if you're in the Ryan Fazio campaign, you're like full speed ahead, man. Let's go.
Well, look, this whole thing that happened, at least with Aaron Stewart announcing her stepping down, only took place the night before the convention, right? Yeah. So they had to scurry about to get people lined up, obviously, mm-hmm. for the votes mm-hmm. for Fazio, which obviously came through. But, you know, it's never so easy that you can just take care of everything within 24-hour time. Yeah. I think there's still going to be some mending and fences and some bridge building to take place anyway.
Oh, so you think that, in your experience, you would think that some of the Stewart loyalists went over to Ryan Fazio, John, maybe begrudgingly or not?
I think that some of them still remained concerned. You know, you're never going to get everybody to be 100%, especially the day after. That's just not the way it works. It takes a while to build that out. It'd be more interesting to see how this works out for the donation side of things. Are we going to see those supporters financially give money to Ryan Fazio or not? That's one way to kind of telltale sign beyond convention.
Yeah. And you know what's interesting, John? I've kind of mused here on the program. Listen, let's assume, and we'll get to the Democrats in a second, because that's fascinating to me. But, you know, let's assume that Ned Lamont goes on, he pushes back, he wins the primary, and it's Ned Lamont versus Ryan Fazio come this November. To me, I think, John, just the visual of a young 36 or 38-year-old Ryan Fazio, whatever he is, and Ned Lamont in his 70s, do you think that just the visual may work to some extent for the Republicans here or not?
Well, look, this is, I think, part of the reason that you could say what's going on with Josh Elliott running, right? Mm-hmm. Is that there's also that age gap difference, too.
Yeah.
And I don't want to ignore even Aaron Stewart for this, because same thing. She's sure. in her 30s, too. So there's been a generation divide. I mean, this is nothing new. I mean, look at New York. I mean, talk about a tremendous generation divide.
Yeah.
There too. This is a national issue that a lot of people aren't talking about. So it could be politicized in any kind of which way you want. But I think this is something that we're seeing more than just in Connecticut.
Dr. John Wharton joining us from Southern Connecticut State University, as always, when politics is leading the docket, as it usually is here on the show. To the Democrats, John, Ned Lamont, 75% of the delegates, but a lot of people were wondering, all right, is Josh Elliott going to get 15? He got 25%. You surprised with that number or not?
I was dumbfounded by it. I thought there'd be a good chance that he would get 15%. Mm-hmm. Frankly, I didn't think he was going to get less than 15. I didn't expect almost double.
Really? Really?
Yeah, and I had students of mine who actually were at the convention, and they were all texting me, like live texting me with the towns that were coming in.
Yeah.
And I was like, really? I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it. That was a surprise to me.
So where did this extra oomph, John, come from for Josh Elliott? What have you been able to gauge on this?
I think a part of it is there is this distrust and concern with so many of Generation Y and Z, but particularly Z.
Mm-hmm.
That they just don't, they think that the centrist direction that Lamont and most people in the Democratic Party are leading is not the way that they should go, that they should go, you know, a little bit more progressive than anything else. Not a little bit, but probably more so, let's say that.
And you mean on things like taxes and taxing the wealthy,
sure, housing,
and capital gains? Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Financial issues, housing issues. I mean, name your issue. I mean, you know, a lot of this is there. And then also, don't forget, I mean, the one big thing progressives have been stressing is to spend down the money mm-hmm. that has been saved up, you know, with the state and rainy day fund.
Yeah, yeah. So is there, look, I know, I guess there's always a shot, John, politically, but is there, does Josh Elliott, if he gets the $3 million, which he says he's close to getting the matching funds for, does he have any reasonable chance, in your mind, to pull a Mom Donnie and beat Ned Lamont or not?
No, no, because for several reasons. One, he still has to get his name brand out there, mm-hmm. You know, and two, and I think it's most critical, everybody knows that you know, Ned Lamont has got his own personal, you know, finances covered in this. So how do you go up against somebody like that? You just can't. And then, you know, you already know his poll numbers. You know, he's hovering at 60%. I mean, he's one of the top three, you know, popular governors in the U.S. But I will say this, Paul, and you know, this is fodder for you, is think about this in the future. Somebody like Elliot, Joshua Elliott, as well as Ron Fauci, are doing this now in preparation for 4 years from now.
That's
what this is all about.
Yeah, because to John, and we'll wrap up on this, and I said this earlier in the show, doesn't this sort of signal, and it's kind of already happened with the Republicans, John, and Trump and all this, but isn't this now the thing that everybody has waited for, that with this and Luke Bronin and some of the other people running, kind of this even in the General Assembly, this kind of generational change that the Democrats haven't really been through yet?
Well, yeah, and even when I get to your congressional delegation, you're right about John Larson, right? This is said over and over again with the first congressional district, and is that, look, you know, some of these lawmakers have been placeholders for decades.
Yeah.
So at what point will you see, you know, the party, Democratic Party, and even a lot of the lawmakers, you know, change? Honestly, Paul, I'm not holding my breath. I'm not expecting that to happen overnight.
Wow. Okay. Good to have the opinions always and the keen analysis. Dr. Jonathan Wharton, poli-sci, urban studies and all that at Southern Connecticut State University in my hometown of beautiful New Haven. John, good to talk with you again, and I'm sure we'll be chatting down the road.
Great, Paul. Take care.
Thanks. Appreciate it. There you go. As we continue our show-long wrap-up here of the weekend nominating conventions. Yes, we've been talking politics and cockfights today. Cockfighting and politics. There's got to be some connection there. I'm not sure. Joining us right now, there's a segue to our buddy, our pal, Substack.com, Red Meat for Mushy Moderates, and the Connecticut News Junkie, the one and only Terry Cowgill, is on board at this time every Monday. Terry, good afternoon. How are you?
Well, not bad, although it's so difficult to stay focused on Connecticut politics with all of this naked corruption going on in Washington and all the cockfighting as well. So.
Cockfighting in Tolland wasn't on my dance card when I woke up this morning. Oh, man. Terry, before we start talking about D.C., would you make now, I'm sure you, like me, over the years, we've covered a lot of election nights and nominating conventions and all that. Good and clean, sadly, you know, some not good things for Aaron Stewart. She's got to deal with that from personal and legal reasons. But if you're Ryan Fazio and the Republicans, you look at what happened with the Democrats and you say, all right, let's go. Let's sit and watch what happens and let's get it on here. What are your thoughts?
And you know, I was struck by the fact that I mean, I look back at the last eight gubernatorial election cycles, and in all eight of those cycles, the Republicans put up a candidate or a nominee or governor who was a wealthy self-funder.
Yeah,
and now finally they broke the mold. They finally figured out that, you know, if the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result.
Yeah.
They finally came to their senses and put up somebody who's not only not a wealthy self-funder, but a younger person. And instead of, I think that Stefanowski and Foley were in their 60s at the time.
Yeah.
And I think it's a breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
Now he has the stage all to himself because Aaron Stewart imploded and Bessie McCoy, of course, offered to step down. She didn't really have a chance anyway.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be very interesting. But the Democrats, of course, are already sharpening their knives, as you've covered, I think, earlier in the show.
Sure. And listen, I don't blame them. They're going to go. Their thing is going to be Trump, Trump, Trump. And I would expect nothing less from them. Ryan is a really good policy guy. I don't know whether they've ever talked to him individually, but he's been on this station numerous times. He was out in front, Terry, months ago with eyeing what's going to happen with the public benefits charge on the electric bills. So I think it's going to come down to, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, it's going to be, hey, I know, you know, Ryan's going to be, hey, I know, Trump, we get it. But can we try some different things here? Whereas the governor, and I played a clip from his chat with Dennis House over the weekend, he said, hey, we've achieved a lot here. I know I'm not as left as some people want with taxes, but I think the governor is just going to say, all right, let me laundry list for some of you people the stuff we've done, and we're going to continue to do it.
Yeah, and I do think that you know, the strategy really for any for the Democrats, no matter who the Republican nominee was to try to tie him to Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And because we know that he's just not terribly popular in Connecticut. But I'll tell you what, and this is something that probably most Democrats won't tell you.
Yeah.
In the 2024 presidential election, Donald Trump got 42% of the vote.
Yeah.
Okay. That's nothing to sneeze at.
No.
Now, wouldn't it be great if you were Ned Lamont and some other Democrats running for state office, if you could peel off some of those votes? Because, you know, Donald Trump is now, his popularity is now down into the mid-30s,
mm-hmm.
Of people who approve of him. So there's got to be some people who voted for him here in Connecticut who are disenchanted with him. I would think that Democrats would maybe want to peel some of those voters off. But if you just run a campaign and try to tie Ryan Fazio to Trump, you're not going to do that. And I thought he handled that question from Dennis House about Trump.
Yeah.
He handled it, I thought, quite artfully. You know, he said, well, look, you know, if he wants to support me, I voted for him. And if he wants to come in and say something about me, that's fine. But I don't have any plans to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think that will probably suffice at least for now, but he's going to have to answer for that on more than one occasion.
Yeah, sure. Terry Cowgill is the guest, Connecticut News Junkie and Substack.com. Terry, the number, delegate percentage for Josh Elliott, 20, around about 24-25%, give or take a decimal. Did that number surprise you or not? It mildly surprised me. I thought he would be in the high teens. Did that surprise you when you saw that?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't surprise me that he got the required 15% at least to force a primary.
Mm-hmm.
That I did expect. But yeah, I wasn't quite sure what to make of it. I didn't think he would get a quarter of the vote. I really didn't. So I sort of come down where you were. He outperformed my expectations, but you know, nor did he get as high a number as I'm sure that he would like. And you know, we're one of the few states here, Connecticut, where we have both a convention and a primary.
Yeah.
And of course it's only a primary if somebody can get 15%, but somebody usually does. I don't know why we feel like we have to have both a primary or both a convention and a primary. I guess if we eliminated the conventions, we'd be depriving all of those delegates of a junket at at one of the casinos in Eastern Connecticut. But
yeah.
It just seems like just so much, such a waste of time and money. But you know, that's me.
And I know there are people that say get rid of the lieutenant governor's position too. We can debate all that all day. Hey, finally, Terry, on Mr.
I wrote a whole column on that.
Did you really? Did you really?
Yes.
Are you pro lieutenant governor or get rid of it?
Completely against it.
Okay.
It's unnecessary. And you may recall a time back in this was in Massachusetts,
yeah.
And they have the same lieutenant governor job description as we do,
yeah.
And there was a time when Deval Patrick was governor,
yes,
and he had a guy, and I think his name was Tim something or other. It was his lieutenant governor from Worcester, and he resigned. It was caught in some kind of drunk driving scandal. So he resigned in the middle of his term.
Yeah.
So Massachusetts went 2 whole years with no lieutenant governor. And you know what? Nobody even noticed.
Nobody cared.
Yeah.
Finally, Terry, on Mr. Trump, you know, listen, it is what it is. My prediction is, I don't know whether I told you this, my prediction is he's going to walk away sometimes next year. And the estimable James Carville happens to agree with me on this. But, man, you saw it over the weekend again, Terry, in about the minute we have left. Mr. Cassidy, senator from Louisiana, Trump said, get him out. And the Republican, the compliant Republican Party voters, two people were picked. Neither one got a majority. So there's a runoff coming. But Trump said, get him out. And they got him out.
Yeah, he still does have that power, even though he is politically weakened. He has the power to do that. And you remember what happened in Indiana when there was nine states, Republican state senators who refused to bend with Trump's wishes to redistrict in the mid-cycle.
Yeah.
And he got people to challenge them, and seven of those nine Republican state senators lost their primaries.
Yeah.
So he still got mojo.
Yeah.
We'll see how long that lasts, because he's really in decline now, and I just don't know how much longer he can hold out.
Yeah,
I tend to agree with you with your timeline.
Yeah, I really think after the turn of the year, we'll see what happens. All right, Terry Cowgill, check out his stuff. Outstanding, ConnecticutNewsJunkie.com, and Red Meat for Mushy Moderates on Substack.com. Terry, thanks, and we'll chat next week. Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you.
All right, take care. Yeah, see, there's somebody else who agrees with me. So now I have Terry Cowgill and James Carville on my side, folks. I firmly believe, and you can see him slowing down a little, I firmly believe it won't be for a scandal. Mr. Trump, sometime after the first of the year, next year, is going to walk away. He'll blame health reasons, or he'll say he spoke with his doctors or his family, and Mr. Vance will take over.